tiara, so I have to say we'll do Gemara Shir and Tamil Alach Shir early, but then we'll do Shir before Seder tomorrow. So be on time tomorrow. We're gonna do Shir early. Okay, be on time every day. Anyway, but particularly tomorrow, we're gonna have Shir early. So we are beginning to learn Maseches Makos. With Maseches Makos, you would imagine just by the title of the Masechta, should be a Masechta that's all about Makos. It should be all about Malkos. So if you were writing a book and it was all about Malkos, how would you start the book? You'd probably start with, okay, this is what you have to do in order to deserve Malkos, or this is what Malkos is, or this is how we do Malkos, something like that. In fact, we do get to it eventually, of who gets Malkos. That is the title of the third parak. Ve'elu hein halokin. These are the people that get Malkos. That's the very first Mishnah of the third and last parak of this Masechta. So of course, the first thing that jumps out at us is, if we have a Masechta called Malkos, how come it doesn't start talking about the most basic things about Malkos? It talks about Edom Zomimin, it talks about an entirely different topic. Not only that, but even when it talks about Edom Zomimin, even assuming that we're not going to talk about Malkos first, we're just going to talk about a case of where someone gets Malkos, and that case is Edom Zomimin, why would we start a conversation about Edom Zomimin, which is not about the basic halach of Edom Zomimin? Let's see what the Mishnah talks about before we ask any questions. Let's see what the Mishnah says. Says the Mishnah, Ketzad Edom Nasim Zomimin. How do Edom become Edom Zomimin? So right off the bat, we see that we're not talking about Malkus per se. We're talking about Edom Zomimin. Our topic is Edom Zomimin. So you expect the answer to be, how do Edom become Edom Zomimin? Oh, very simple. We learn Chumash, and we know what the Chumash tells us in Dvarim Perik Yotas, Psukim Tes Vav, through Chaval, right here in the Mar Mekomos, what the Chumash tells us, how do Edom become Edom Zomimin? Reuven and Shimon come and testify that they saw Ephraim steal money from Menashe, and then Levi and Yehuda come and say, how can you say that, Reuven and Shimon, on that day, in that you were with us in a totally different place, so you're Edom Zomimin, so we make Reuven and Shimon pay that money, right? Reuven and Shimon get punished, whatever punishment they tried to give to Ephraim. That's how Edom become Edom Zomimin. That should have been the answer of the Mishnah. What does the Mishnah say? How do Edom become Edom Zomimin? Mi'idin anabish ponishu ben grusha ben chalutza. We testify that someone's a ben grusha ben chalutza, that his mother, a Kohen, a Kohen's mother was divorced at the time that he was conceived, which means that his father had married a divorced woman. His father, Mr. Cohn, had married a divorced woman, and that produced him, which means he's not a Kohen, because it's Mechalal, the child. The halach is if a Kohen marries a Grusha, the child is a Chalal, the child is not a Kohen. He doesn't have any of the halachas of Kohuna. It's an Issa Daraisa for the father to marry a Grusha. Are they married? Are they considered even married in halacha? Do they need a get if a Kohen marries a Grusha? So it's important. This happens all the time, unfortunately. They are married. The Kiddushin is Tovsin, right? They are married, but the child is not a Kohen. Is he a Mamzer? No, he's not a Mamzer either, but he's not a Kohen. So it's an Issa Daraisa, it's a violating, and the child is a Chalal. Or Ben Chalutza, Chalitza is when they don't do Yibum, it's a type of divorce also, so to speak. It's what potters you from the Yibum. It takes away the Zika, the connection that the Almana has with her brother-in-law, just like a get would take away the connection a woman has with her husband. So a Ben Grusha or Ben Chalutza means that we're saying about this fellow that he's not a Kohen. So you would think, okay, great, so you know what we're going to do to the Edom? They can't be Kohanim either. That should be Kasher Zamam. Now you wanted to say he's not a Kohen, now you're not a Kohen, now you're Chalalim. So it says the Mishnah, no. Ein omrim yaseze ben grusha ben chalutza tachtav. We don't say that they're going to be a ben grusha ben chalutza instead. Elolok arbaim. Instead we just give him Malkus. We can't do to them what they wanted to do to the other guy, so we give him Malkus. Why can't we do to them what they wanted to do to the other guy? What would you have said? Why can't we do to these Edim? Why can't we do Kasher Zamam? Do exactly what they tried to do to the other guy. They tried to make him a Chalam, make them a Chalam. So the Pasha Pshad, I would say, is they may not be Kohanim. If they're not Kohanim, then what does it mean? You're going to make me not a Kohen? Shkayach, I've never been a Kohen. I wasn't planning on becoming one, so it had no problem. So that's not a punishment at all. We'll see that may or may not be. And what if he is a Kohen? So then we should do Kasher Zamam? So there must be something else also. Meaning, because the Eid might be Kohanim, and if they are Kohanim, why don't we still don't do this? We still don't make them Chalalim. We still say they're going to get Malkus instead. So says the Mishnah, that's one case of An example of Ketzar Eidim Nasim Zomnin. Second case, Midan on a Bishploni Shu Chayiv Legalos. They testify that someone is Chayiv Legalos, that he has to go to near Miklat, that he killed someone Bishogeg. So, in Omrim Yigla Zetachtov, we don't say send these Eidim to Galos instead. Ella lo Karboim, instead you give Malkus. Great, two examples of Ketzar Eidim Nasim Zomnin. So, right away, again, there are two issues to deal with over here. Number one is, why does the Masechta start with a discussion of Eidim Zomnin? And number two is, if you're going to start with a discussion of Eidim Zomnin, talk about how Eidim become Eidim Zomnin. Not how Eidim don't become Eidim Zomnin, meaning what we're actually giving examples of in this Mishnah are two examples where we don't do Kasher Zomam, where we don't do to them what they wanted to give to the other guy. These are not examples of where we do what they wanted to give to the other guy. So that's a very strange way to start the discussion of Eidim Zomnin. Those are two separate kashas. Now, in terms of the first kasha, why are we even talking about Eidim Zomnin? So that's what the Ritva points out over here, that the reason we're talking about Eidim Zomnin, and we don't begin with the more logical beginning of this Masechta, which would be Ve'elu Hein Halokin, the third parak of this Masechta, that actually talks about getting Malkus, says the Ritva, two reasons. He says, first of all, Hada Pasuk Tana Baha, this is source number two, Hada Pasuk Tana Baha, V'lo Pasuk Perek Elu Ein Alokin, Davi Iker Haim Masechta De Makos, Mishum De, meaning that, and that would have been better, because that's really what the Masechta is about, Malkus, Mishum De Parshas Malkus De Ksiv, Vayim Bin Akos HaRasha, Ksiv Be Edim Zomim. So what's his answer? Why is it that we start with Edim Zomim, we don't start with Malkus? Because when you open up a Chumash and you look for a discussion of Malkus, where are you going to find it? You'll find it in the context of a parsha that's really about Eidim Zomnin. So we're giving context over here. Just like the Torah taught us about Malkus within the context of a discussion about Eidim Zomnin. So the Gemara also, the Mishnayos also, is going to talk about Malkus, but first it's going to set the background. It's going to set the context, and the context is Eidim Zomnin. That's answer number one, says the Ritva. But then he says, Va'od. Dehamrinim b'gemara detana amasnisin deperak hanechnakin kai, dektani kala zomim makdim in losa misa. We, in Maseches Makos, when we begin Maseches Makos, the first day of Zman, we feel like it's a new beginning, we're opening up a brand new book, it has no connection to anything we did before. Yeah, that's for us. When Rebbe was being Masada the Mishnayos, there was a connection to what he had just finished. So he did not just finish Pesachim just because we happened to learn in Yeshiva Maseches Pesachim last year. No, he finished something else just now. What did he finish? Where did Makos come? It came right after Sanhedrin. Rebbe's building off of Sanhedrin. And the very end of Sanhedrin is about Eidim Zomnin. In Perek HaNechnakin, it says, Kol HaZomim Makdim Losa Misa Chutz MiZomim Bas Kohen. It tells us about Eidim Zomnin. And therefore, we also begin the discussion with Eidim Zomnin. It's a natural, it naturally follows from the end of Masech Sanhedrin. If you open up Masech Sanhedrin, which you might have done at some point during Seder this morning, because we have another Gemara in Sanhedrin to look at, but if you were to actually open up a Masech Sanhedrin and look at the last parak, what's the last parak of Masech Sanhedrin called? Parachelek. You ever learned Sanhedrin, the last 20 blot of Masech Sanhedrin is straight Agadata. There's not a halacha gemara in the whole parak. It's all agadata. That's parachelak. Rav Shachter used to give, I think he may still do it, on Monday nights, he gives shiurim in Brooklyn, and they were learning Sanhedrin for a while, and he got to Daf Tzadi, he got to parachelak, and he said, okay, let's pick a new masechta. And they said, what are you talking about? We got 20 blot left. He said, how am I going to say shiur on agadata for 20 blot? I never heard shiurim from Rav Soloveitchik on it. I don't know how to say shiur on it. I have no idea what that means to this day. Never heard shiurim from a salvation the last, so he doesn't know how to learn because he never heard shiurim from a salvation. But he felt like Agadata, he needed Masorah in it, and there was no way that he was going to be able to say shiur in it. So that's what we have in the last 20 blad of Masech Sanhedrin. It's all Agadata. It's Parachelek. But it's Machlokes Rishonim, what the last parak of Masech Sanhedrin really is. Some put Chelek before that. So if you look in the Mishnayos, I think it has a different than we have in the Gemara. So says the Ritva, that Parachelik is not the end of Masech Sanhedrin, HaNechnakin is the last parak of Sanhedrin, and that's where it talks about Eidim Zomnin. So we jump straight from there into Eidim Zomnin over here. So in terms of question number one, why is it that Maseches Makos, which is supposed to be all about Malkus, starts off talking about Eidim Zomnin, it's got nothing to do with Malkus. So Again, two answers. Number one, the context of Malkus in the Torah is the Parsha of Edom Zalmin. And number two, Malkus doesn't just start out of nowhere, it's building off of Masech Sanhedrin. At the end of Masech Sanhedrin, we talked about Malkus. Great, that's how he deals with that. And he says, and it shouldn't surprise you, that the beginning of one Masechta is governed by what was discussed in another Masechta, because we have that when it comes to even the placement of an entire Masechta. Masechas Nedarim. What Seder is Masechas Nedarim in? Masechas Nedarim is in Seder Nashim. Is Masechas Nedarim about women? It's not about Ksuvos. It's not about Kiddushin. It's not about Gittin. It's not about women-related issues. It's not about Sota. Why is Masechas Nedarim in Seder Nashim? It's not Yevamos. Why is it in Seder Nashim? So you think, well, Seder Nashim is the shortest one anyway, so you need to beef it up a little bit. But no, it doesn't really belong in Seder Nashim. Why is it in Seder Nashim? Because the seventh paragraph of Maseches Ksuvos deals with Nedarim. So since the seventh paragraph of Maseches Ksuvos deals with Nedarim, agav that, we learn a whole Masechta about Nedarim in Seder Nashim. So just like a different Masechta can mandate the placement, or can determine the placement of an entire Masechta in a given Seder, so too, what we were just doing in the previous Masechta, the last thing we learned in the previous Masechta, can determine what our first conversation is going to be in the next Masechta. And that's why our first conversation is about Edom Zalmin. So again, we started here by saying there are two issues with the beginning of this Masechta. The first issue is, why are we talking about Edom Zalmin at all? We should talk about Malkus. Second issue is, once we talk about Edom Zalmin, why don't we talk about Edom Zalmin? Why don't we talk about how Edom Zalmin actually happens? Why are we talking about how Edom Zalmin, how Kasher Zalmin doesn't happen? It's a very strange way to start, how Kasher Zalmin doesn't happen. That second issue is the Gemara's issue. That's what the Gemara actually asks. So our Gemara wasn't bothered by the first Kasha. That's why we needed the Ritva to deal with the first Kasha. The Gemara itself is bothered by the second Kasha. Good, you want to talk about Edom Zalmin? Fine, talk about Edom Zalmin. Don't talk about when we don't do Kasher Zalmin, when we give Malkus. So the Gemara essentially says that the reason we start the conversation about Edom Zalmin in terms of when we don't do Kasher Zalmin relates to what we just said in terms of why there's even a conversation about Edom Zalmin here in the first place. What did the Ritva say? Why is there a conversation about Edom Zalmin here in the first place? Because that's what we just finished in Masechta Sanhedrin. Great. And what did it say in Masechta Sanhedrin? Well, what it said in Masechta Sanhedrin is that every time you make Edom Zalmin, you give them exactly the same punishment, except for Zom Mebas Kohen Ubo'ala. We're not going to get into details now what that's about, but except for a given case. Ah, so we did it with the last conversation finished with except for, with an exception of when we don't do Kasher Zalmin. So then it makes sense that this new Mishnah is going to talk about when we don't do Kasher Zalmin. That's what we just left off with. Yeah, it would be strange to begin a conversation about Edom Zalmin in this way, but this isn't the beginning of the conversation. This is a mid-sentence from the last Masechta. So since we just left off with the exception, we're going to continue with the exception. Now, the outline, Daf Beis, entirely, Amud Aleph and Amud Beis, can be very easily, is a very beautifully structured Daf. Meaning it doesn't really jump all over the place. It's a very, very clearly structured Daf. And you should go through the Gemaras in the next couple of days, in Morning Seder, and Beis Amud Aleph, and Beis Amud Beis. I'll just explain to you the structure of how it works. First, the Gemara starts with this Yisod, that since at the end of Sanhedrin we speak about where there's not a full Kasher Zamam, where we don't fully fulfill Kasher Zamam, we begin Maseches Makos by talking about cases where there's no Kasher Zamam. Then we go on to each case, to discuss each case that the Mishnah gave where we give Malkus instead of Kasher Zamam. What was the first case we gave where we give Malkus instead of Kasher Zamam? Where Edom said, you know what was the case?
Ben Grusha
Ben Chalutza, exactly. So the Gemara gives two explanations why it is that the Eid doesn't become a Chalal. Why is that true? Why don't we do Kasher Zalmin in that case? Why don't we turn to the aid and say, okay, you're not a Kohen anymore, if he was a Kohen? Why don't we do so? The Gemara gives two explanations why that would be so. Then we move on to the second case. And what was the second case where we said we're not going to give him what he tried to give to the other person? where these Edom tried to give the other person galus. So why don't we give him galus? They're 48 year miklat. We just read about it in this past week's parsha. Throw him in one of those Ari miklat and tell him we're going to kill you. If it's someone, we're going to let someone kill you if you don't go there. Or you have to go there. Why do we give him malchus instead of galus? And the Gemara is going to give two explanations why we don't do kasher zaman on galus. So we'll have two explanations for the first exception, two explanations for the second exception. Now, in both of those cases, what do we give them? Instead of giving them what they tried to give, what do we give them? Malchus. So the next logical conversation has to be, why do we give them malchus? Who told us to give them malchus? You're supposed to give them what they tried to give to the other guy. Where does malchus come from? So the Gemara is going to discuss the source for Edom Zomim getting malchus from Vahayim bin Akos HaRasha. It's going to explain. So that it's a very logical way to explain the Mishnah. I mean, normally, the one advantage you have in Makos, one of the advantages of learning Makos, most Masechtas start out, you have a Mishnah, then you have like 10 block Gemara. And 10 block Gemara means that those 10 block are not all really discussing the Mishnah. It takes you here and there and all over the place. This Gemara, the next Mishnah is right there in Gimel and Aleph. This Gemara is mamish, on point. We discuss case number one, why we don't do kasher zamam, two explanations. Case number two, why we don't do kasher zamam, two explanations. Then we discuss why the Mishnah says we give them malchus, right, which we do give them. And then we say, okay, wait, in our Mishnah we said there are two cases where we give malchus instead of kasher zamam. Are there any other cases where we don't do kasher zamam? And the Gemara says, yeah, we could think of a few more, quotes a braisa, that adds to the list. It adds another two or three cases where we don't do kasher zaman, based on a braisa, and it describes those cases, which leads us to discuss the Edom Zomim be knas. But that's essential. That's daf beis. That's daf beis in its entirety. So can you learn a daf of Gemara in 5 minutes? You just did. I mean, you're missing some details, but that's the basic outline of daf beis. Why it is that you don't get kasher zaman when you testify ben grush ben chalutza, why you don't get kasher zaman when you testify the chayiv galus, why you do get malchus, and are there any other cases that we didn't mention in the Mishnah that you don't get kasher zaman?
Did they get
malchus? Oh, that's going to be a discussion. We'll get there. That's the next one. Meaning, are all of those cases that the Gemara is going to add...
Is it default malchus?
Right. Is it a default malchus, or is it just other cases where we're not going to do kasher zaman, and maybe we'll do nothing? Or do we say, no, if these are Edom Zomim, we got to do something, so it's either going to be kasher zamam, and if it can't be kasher zamam, then it would have to be malchus. Good. That's very on point. That's a machlokes rishonim, and that's, God willing, the next sugya is going to start with that conversation. God willing. But the number one issue relating to Edom Zomim, ironically, is not even here in Maseches Makos. And that is the idea that Eid Zomim is a chiddush. Now, what does it mean? Before we even get into the sugya that tells us that Eid Zomim is a chiddush, it's important to define the terminology, to define the concept. What does the word chiddush mean?
Well, it's something that we didn't know before.
Yeah, right? So I mean, we didn't know before, something is brand new. Now, let me ask you something. Is Dalet Minim a chiddush? No. Now, without the Torah, would you have known to take a palm branch and a citron, I wouldn't have even known what a citron is, and myrtle leaves and whatever, and wave them in different directions? Shouldn't that be a chiddush also? What person in his right mind ever would have thought of these things? So most people translate chiddush exactly the way you just translated chiddush, and it seems, because that's always how we translate the word chiddush, right? But it seems halachically, when we describe chiddush, it must be something more than just that, because kol ha-Torah kol is a chiddush. I never would have thought that a sheretz could be metame somebody, or that you know, I never would have thought that a dead body is navi avos atuma, and that if metal touches it, it be a cherev areyu kechala. I never would have thought any of this stuff. The whole kol ha-Torah kol is a chiddush. We wouldn't have known any of it, right? With rare exception, I probably, you know, there are some, you know, mishpatim that we probably could have figured out. You probably could have figured out you shouldn't kill somebody. You know, but most of ritual law, all of Yaradei is a chiddush. Right? So how do we define chiddush? And you should know, you ask lamdanim, lomdim, people very often have not, just never thought of this. They never thought of it. They learned the sugya, they learned the chiddush, they just never thought what chiddush means. So Shachter always likes to point out, he drilled into us. Chiddush means, the definition of the word Chiddush is, this, you'll remember this, because I'm telling you, you have to remember this. The definition of the word Chiddush is, Davar hasoser es haklal. Something that breaks the rules. That which goes against the normal Torah rules. Meaning, Chiddush doesn't mean something we wouldn't have known had the Torah not told us about it. We wouldn't have known anything had the Torah not told us about it. Chiddush means, given the system of Torah, the system of halacha, there are rules in halacha. Anything that goes against those rules would then be defined as a chiddush. What do I mean, there are rules in halacha? For example, there is a rule in halacha that when it comes to transmitting tumah from one thing to the next, that if I touch a dead body, let's say, what level of tumah is the dead body on? Avi avos hatumah, the granddaddy of all tumahs. If I touch the dead body, what do I become? An avatumah, level down. And then I touch food, that becomes a rishon tumah, another level down. The rule of transmitting tumah apparently is that it always goes down a notch whenever it's being transmitted. If you were to find an exception to that rule, that would be a chiddush. There are rules that govern all of halacha. There are rules that govern dine mamonos. In dine mamonos, we have a rule: hamotzi mechaveru olav haraya. I want to say that you owe me money, and you say you don't. If I want you to pay me, I have to prove that you owe me the money. That's a rule. There are klalim that govern every area of halacha. Now it happens to be the different areas of halacha are governed by different klalim. Meaning, tumah and tahara have their own set of rules. And isur v'heter has its own set of rules. And dini mamonos has its own set of rules. They each follow the best example. Those are the three areas, the three basic areas. The pasuk says, bein dam ledam, bein din ledin, bein nega lenega. Why does it have to say three times an expression that says that we should be able to discern different things? Because those three things are three separate areas of halacha. Dam ledam is iser v'heter. It's dam nida. A man's not allowed to be with his wife when she's nida. You have to eat kosher food. All of yaradeh. Iser v'heter. That's bein dam ledam. Bein din ledin. Din is dinim amanis. Monetary issues. That's a separate area of halacha. Bein nega la nega. What's a nega? Taras. Taras is Tumah V'Tahara. Just to illustrate how they each are governed by their own sets of rules, what do you do in a case of Suffolk? You're not sure about a halacha. So if you're in the world of Dine Mamnus, we just said, I don't know if you, the Basin doesn't know if you owe me money or not. So what do we say? What's the guiding principle? Hamotzi Mechaver Olav Haraya. I have to prove that you owe it to me, otherwise you don't have to pay me anything. If our suffix is in Isser V'Heter, I don't know if this meat is kosher or not. Right, so what's the guiding principle? Suffix d'oraisa l'chumra, suffix d'rabbanan l'kula. And in Tumah V'Tahara, I'm not sure if I'm tamei or not, if I touch the item that's tamei. Strangely, the rule is, well, where were you? Were you in Rosh HaSarabim or Rosh HaSayachid? Big Suffolk Tumah versus Arabim is Tahar, Suffolk Tumah versus Yachid is Tameh. Totally different sets of rules. These are areas of halacha that all have rules. When you have a Dover, a Soser, a Saklal, that's called the Chiddush. So over here we're talking in court, in Dine Mamanis, in Beis Din dealing with issues, Lavda Afka Dine Mamanis, Beis Din in the halachas of Beis Din, halachas of Eidos, halachas of testimony. And we're going to say that Edim Zomim is a chiddush. It goes against the rules. So we're going to have to figure out in what way does it go against the rules? What makes Edim Zomim a chiddush? In what way is it strange? In what way is it different than normal rules of Edos?
There's a pasuk, why is that out of the norm? Like if you see some Akash Zomim, why?
Because if nothing else in all of Hilchos Edos matches, meaning if all of Hilchos Eidos would normally tell you, okay, this goes in one direction, and this one pasuk tells you, but not here, then that's a chiddush. So yeah, there's a pasuk, and it's a real din, but it's a chiddush. And my nafkamina whether something's a chiddush or not. So generally speaking, when you have a rule in the Torah, you have a halacha in the Torah, you can apply that to other places. You can apply that halacha to elsewhere. It's what we call a mematzino or a binyana. The Torah tells me something in one place, and I can use that rule and apply it everywhere. But when something's a chiddush, we assume ein lecha bo ela chidusha. If it's a rule breaker, we assume it can only apply here, it doesn't apply anywhere else. That it only applies to this limited circumstance. Or ein lecha bo ela mishas chidusha, which is the same basic concept. We'll see that in action in a second, how that concept applies. But that's the idea of chiddush. Now, where does the Gemara say that Edom Zomim is a chiddush? It's not here in Makos, it's a Gemara in Sanhedrin. The Gemara says the following case. You have Edim that come and testify. Reuven and Shimon testify that, like we said before, Ephraim stole money from Menashe on January 1st. Right? Then Reuven and Shimon are really very popular guys, so they were invited throughout the entire May and June wedding season. They were invited to be Edei Kiddushin at everybody's weddings. So they were Edei Kiddushin at everybody's weddings, wonderful guys, everyone likes them. Then comes July, and Moshe and Aaron come and say, oh, Reuven and Shimon, they say that what Ephraim did to Menashe, let's not say owed money, let's say Ephraim killed Menashe. They say that Ephraim killed Menashe, you know, at a certain date in a certain place. The date that they say Ephraim killed Menashe, Reuven and Shimon were with us. So they take Reuven and Shimon and they turn them into Edom Zomim. What about all the people that got married with Reuven and Shimon as their witnesses? Do we say that Reuven and Shimon were pasul eidos the entire time? Or do we say Reuven and Shimon are pasul eidos starting in July? Certainly not before January, because before January we have no evidence that they ever lied about anything. Right, so we're not going to assume that just because they lied later it means that they were liars back then, before January. But does the psul begin in January 1st, or does the psul begin in July? Well, they lied. It's going to turn out that they lied in January.
No, but meaning that it already happened. So they weren't the reality. Then it was at that time they were good agents.
They were trusted, but now we found out otherwise. No, let's say we found out that they were ganavim or mechalei Shabbos or anything else. So then it would turn out that they were apostles all the time. Right? If I only find out that someone's a ganav the morning after my wedding. And I had him as my Eid Kiddushin, but he stole for years before that. So now I have a serious shaila on my hands. Because he's a Rasha from the time that he's a Ganav. Often told the story, Rav Shechter used to tell us the story. He was once at a chasna, and they called him up. He said, Rav Shnar Kotler was Masada Kiddushin. It was a YU boy who then went to learn in Lakewood. Path less traveled. And Rav Shnar Kotler was Masada Kiddushin. And they called up Rav Shechter as an Eid Kiddushin. And they called up someone else as the other Eid Kiddushin, a rabbi from Borough Park or something, as the other Eid Kiddushin. And Shecht went up to the chuppah, and he's waiting for the other Eid Kiddushin to come up. And the guy doesn't come up. And they're waiting and waiting, they call him again, he doesn't come up. So they call someone else instead. In the meantime, he said, Rav Shneur Kotler told him over a whole Shtickel Torah, he later published it in the Sefer Big Fat Zone, the whole Shtickel Torah, Rav Shneur Kotler told him, so he benefited from it. But he said he saw later the next day in Yeshiva, he saw one of the other Rebbeim. And the other rabbi said, you know, the rabbi that they were calling up was sitting right next to me. He was there. He was at the wedding. He just wouldn't go up. You know what happened? We were telling him, they're calling you. He said, no, it's okay. They'll find someone else. And we didn't know what was going on. And a week later, that rabbi was on the front page of the New York Times for embezzling money from the government for his school lunch program or something. And he realized that he better not be an Eid Kiddushin because he knew he was about to be caught and everyone was going to know that he's a pasul Eid. Sheikh said, you see, such an erlich ganav that he didn't want to ruin the whole wedding. So he didn't want to upset the whole. But it would have taka been a problem because he was a pasul eid the whole time. What about Edom Zomim? Do we say Edom Zomim are a pasul all the way back from the time they said their testimony, or only from now that we caught them, now that we've proven them to be, or we've declared them Edom Zomim? So that's the machlokas in Maseches Sanhedrin Daf Chav Zayin. Says Gemara Sanhedrin, Eid Zomim. Source number 3. Abai Yamar Lamafreya Hu Nifsal. Abai says it becomes possible Lamafreya. V'Rav Amar Mikanu Labo Nifsal. And Rav says it becomes possible only going forward. So Abai says back to January is ready possible. All those weddings are going to have to happen again. And Rav says, no, only from July and on. Abaye, Amar l'mafreyu nifsal mi'in adasid rashu. Now Abaye makes a lot of sense. If we would have found out that he was a ganav in January, wouldn't we say he was pasul from January? Yeah. We find out that he's mechal Shabbos in January, would we say he's pasul? Yeah. So we find he's an eitzomim. Good. So he's pasul from January. V'atara al tashis yadchem rasha, al tashis rasha aid. Can't have a rasha be your aid. Rava amar mikanu l'abahu nifsal. Rava says no. He's only pasul mikanu l'abah. Only from July and on. Why? Eid Zomim Chiddishu. Because Eid Zomim is a Chiddish. The whole concept of Eid Zomim is a Chiddish. What's the Chiddish? Why is it a Chiddish? What do you mean? We've proven them to be liars. So says Gemara, proven them to be liars? My chaz is the Samach Tahani, Samach Tahani. How do you know that the second set of Eidim are telling the truth? The Moshe and Aaron are telling the truth that Reuben and Shimon were with them. Maybe Reuben and Shimon are telling the truth. You don't know that they're liars. These are two Eidim, reputable people. We haven't proven anything. We just have two other Eidim that contradict them. So somebody's lying, but we don't know that it's them. It might be the other group. And once it's a Chiddush, but the Torah tells us, we believe the second group, not the first group. The fact that we believe the second group, not the first group, that makes it a Chiddush, and therefore, in the Chabad HaLem Mishas Chiddush HaVeilach. We're only, the Torah says, we have to declare Reuven and Shimon Pasul, but we're only going to do it from the moment the Torah tells us to do it. We're not going to go back to when they actually told the Eidos. Now, if this were not a Chiddush, if it were not a Chiddush, then of course you'd go back to when they told the Eidos. Because logically, if it were logical, and we say, oh, okay, someone who's proven to be a liar, someone's proven to be a ganav, he's proven to be Mechal Shabbos, so of course you'd go back to when he actually did the Avera. But since it's a Chiddush to say that they're liars, because they might not be liars, as far as we know, it's a chiddush say that they're liars. We're only going to call them liars from Mishas Chidusho, from right now when the Torah tells us we have to declare them to be Edom Zom, but not Lemafreya. That's Rava's opinion. Who do we passing like? Machlok Sabai and Rava. Almost always we passing like Rava, except for six. Yal Kigam. Six times. Yal Kigam. Yud Ayin Lamid. Kuf Gimel Mem. What does Ayin stand for? Eidim Zobamin Lemafreyo Nifsal Mikan Labba. This is one of the exceptions. We pass like Abaye over here. This is one of the Yal Kigam. So we pass like Abaye. And therefore, Eidim Zobamin are possible from when, according to Abaye? Right? But all the way back from January 1st. Lemafreyo Nifsal. Let me ask you something. Does Abaye think Eidim Zomim are a Chiddush? What?
Yes. I'll say yes.
So why does he say that the apostle all the way to Mafreya? Rava said it's a Chiddush and therefore it can only be Mikad al Abba.
Because the Chiddush itself is not from the time when they were founded. The Chiddush is from
So you could say that somehow Abaye sees in the Pesukim that tell us this Chiddush of Eidim Zomim that they're supposed to be Pasul Mafreya. But then you'd have to find that in the Pesukim.
What is this Chiddush? What's Abaye? If you said Rava.
Right, and Rava would say, I don't see it in the Pesukim. Meaning if you could try to make a machlokas in the Pesukim about that. Or you could say Abaye holds that Eidim Zomim is not a Chiddush. That there's a logic to it. That it doesn't break the rules. Wait, Rava said it was a Chiddush, didn't he? Well, how did Rava say it was a Chiddush? Why is it a Chiddush? Why is it so illogical? Why is it against all, not illogical, why is it against all the rules? Because the rule normally is, you have two Eidim say one thing, two Eidim say Reuven killed Shimon, two Eidim say, no he didn't. Who do you believe? We throw it all out. We don't know anybody. We can't. And Reuven, you know, the two Eidim could testify in another case. We don't possible them. We don't declare them possible. We don't know. So no one's possible. No one's getting punished. Because we don't know. Somebody's lying. We don't know who. That's the normal rule. Rava says this breaks the rule. Because for some unknown reason, we're believing the second group and not the first group. So Abaye might disagree because he might say, it's not an unknown reason. I'll explain to you exactly why we believe the second group and not the first group. There's a logic to it. But then we'd have to figure out what that logic would be.
The logic is that...
One second. So one possibility is that Abaye thinks that it's not a chiddush at all, that it's very logical. The other possibility is that Abaye does not think it's logical. He agrees that it's a chiddush. But he disagrees with this rule that in the Chabo al Mishas Chiddush of Eilach, that a chiddush means that we have to limit ourselves to the time that the Torah says it's going to take effect. Maybe there's no such rule. That even when you have a chiddush, it can apply more broadly than the exact case that the Torah says. Yeah?
So I think what Svarim would just say is that with the 2:2, right? Because you have the first statement that says, yeah, I saw so-and-so do this, right? They're testifying against someone, right? The Eidim itself, they aren't testifying within the case. The Eidim are testifying that you couldn't have seen it. I'm not arguing that he didn't do it, right? He may have done it, I don't know. You people couldn't have seen it. So maybe in that case, that's not such a chiddush to say that in that case, because they're not testifying on the case, they're testifying on the fact that they couldn't have been there.
Say better. Not testifying on the case, they're testifying on?
I don't know.
Come on, let's formulate that. They're not testifying on the case. They're not saying, I don't know if Reuven killed Shimon. What do we know the Eidim are saying? We don't know if Reuven killed Shimon. What are they saying? Imanu Eisem, you couldn't have been there. So I'm not testifying about the case. What am I testifying about?
Yeah.
You. Two Eidim come and say Reuven's a Mechal Shabbos. Do we believe them?
Sure.
Yes. Why can't Reuven say, I'm not? Or Reuven and Shimon. Two Eidim come and say Reuven and Shimon were both Mechal Shabbos. Why can't Reuven and Shimon say, we're not Mechal Shabbos, we promise. Two against two, our word against yours. Who do we believe? For sure the Eidim that say that they're Mechal Shabbos and we kill them. For sure. It's not two against two in that case. Why isn't that two against two? Because Reuven and Shimon aren't witnesses. They're not witnesses to the event. They're balei davar. They're what it's about. You can't be a witness when you're one of the litigants in the case, when you're what the case is about. If someone's suing Reuven for Antalya saying that he owes $1 million, Reuven can't be a witness in the court that he doesn't owe the money. He's the Bal Davar. By Edim Zomim, when we're saying that these guys, Imanu Yisam, you were with us, you couldn't have been there, we're not saying that it's your word against our word. What we're saying is, we're testifying about you, and therefore you don't get a say in the matter. We're testifying that you weren't there. We don't know about the case. We're testifying about you. And when you testify about a person, they don't get a say in the matter. They don't get to talk. Because it's about them. So if that's the case, Edom Zom is not a chiddush at all. It's just like saying Reuven and Shimon are Mechal Shabbos. This is how it works. This is Eidos in general. You know, when you get a ticket, a cop pulls you over for speeding. You ever fight a ticket? You ever go to court? Never got a ticket? Okay, you go to court. Here's what happens. You say, I wasn't speeding. Let's say you weren't. Let's say you believe you weren't. So you say, I wasn't speeding. And the cop says, yes, he was. Cop says, I have it, I wrote it down at the time, and you say, I also wrote it down at the time that I wasn't speeding. Who does the court listen to? Why does the court listen to the cop?
He's the law.
What?
Because he's the law. He's the law.
I am the law.
It's not because he's the law, it's dafka because he's not the law. Here's why. It was unbelievable. It struck me the first time I ever tried to fight a ticket. Here's why they listen to the cop. They listen to the cop because you are the subject of the discussion. The cop is a witness. And who are you against? You're not against the cop. You're against the state or the city. The cop is the witness for the state. So the state has a witness, and you don't. Because you can't be your own witness. You're the subject. So this, it's built into the system that they have a witness, because you're not against the cop. The cop is just a guy. You're against the state. If you have someone in the car, then you can have a witness and call them. Then it becomes more even. Then it's just a matter. Yeah, sure, they allow that. Then it becomes just a matter of who they trust. More of a judgment call. But there's no way they're ever going to listen to you against the cop, because you are not a witness. It's the same thing over here. When I testify, when two Eidim testify, Reuven and Shimon are Mechalei Shabbos, Reuven and Shimon can't say, well, we testify that we're not Mechalei Shabbos. They can't testify, it's about you. So when you have Reuven and Shimon say that we saw Yisachar kill Zvulun, I keep changing the names, Yisachar kills Zvulun, and Moshe and Aaron come and say, no, Yisachar didn't kill Zvulun. So it's not about Reuven and Shimon, it's about the case. It's about Yisachar and Zvulun. So you have two witnesses against two witnesses. But when Reuven and Shimon come and say, Yisachar killed Zvulun, and then Moshe and Aaron come and say, Reuven and Shimon, you couldn't possibly know about that because Imanu Yisam, you were with us on that day. We're not saying anything about Yisachar Zvulun. We're only saying something about Reuven and Shimon. That turns Reuven and Shimon into the Balei Davar, into the actual litigants, into the actual subject. And if they're the subject, they can't be the witnesses. So Abaye might hold that Edom Zomin is a Svara. It's not a Chiddush. It makes plenty of sense. The Gemara said it's a Chiddush. Yeah, that was Rava in the Gemara that said that it's a Chiddush. But Abaye disagrees. Abaye thinks it's not a Chiddush at all. So again, we have two possibilities: whether the reason Abaye holds that Edom Zomin can apply even the Mafreya is because Abaye holds that it's not a Chiddush at all, or maybe he does hold it's a Chiddush, but for some reason thinks the Chiddush should even apply the Mafreya. Those are the two possibilities. We're going to have to see the Ma'ay Nafka Mina. We're going to have to see what the Rishonim say about it. So tomorrow we're actually starting with Shir, because I have to give Shir early, like I mentioned before. So, and I guess after Shir, I'm going to want you to go over the Rishonim that we do in Shir tomorrow. Normally at the end of Shir, I'll tell you what to look at tomorrow. You're not going to have time because we're starting this Shir. But the key things we're going to have to look at are the Ramban on Chumash and Dvarim Perek Yutes, and the Rambam in Hilchos Eidus and the Lechem Mishnah on that Rambam. Be'ezras Hashem, we will see you tomorrow. Have a great day, everybody.